WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, sitting in for Terry Gross. Norman Mailer once wrote that before he was 17, he had formed the desire to be a major writer. Well, that wish certainly came true, and today he turns 80. To celebrate, we'll listen back to a conversation Terry recorded with Mailer in 1991. But first, we have this appreciation from Fresh Air's book critic, Maureen Corrigan.
The Lion in Winter. Norman Mailer turns 80 today. In his youth, Mailer wrote an essay about meeting the aged Dorothy Parker in Hollywood. He was appalled by her overpowdered nose and her eyes, baggy from decades of drink. Now, for younger generations, Mailer is the literary relic, pickled in bourbon. Not that, as a social critic, he ever seemed quite au courant. With his chest thumping against women's libbers and gays, his weird encomiums to the primitive cool of black men, his penchant for He-Man sports like boxing and bullfighting, already derivative of Hemingway's, and his screeds against the computer and television, Mailer always seemed like a literate Hepcat version of Archie Bunker, a man proudly and loudly out of joint with his time, a public man easy to mock. That is, until you read him. There's lots of Mailer to read, and there's lots to avoid. That's the problem with hitting it big early, as Mailer did at age 25 with his first novel, The Naked and the Dead, based on his army experiences in World War II. That early debut gave Mailer a lot of time to make mistakes. But part of his appeal is that he's husky, outsized. So when he makes mistakes, they're whoppers, like the more recent novels on ancient Egypt and the life of Christ. And when he publishes collections of his prose and fiction, like the Whitman-esque Advertisements for Myself and the beefy 1998 retrospective, The Time of Our Time, they're marbled through with lard that arguably makes the prime cuts all the more succulent. The book of Mailer's that I've read and reread, the book that devastates me with its high culture brilliance, street smarts, humor, and serpentine sentence structure, is The Armies of the Night, his 1968 account of the March on the Pentagon that won him the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award. Even the best accounts of the public events of the 1960s that I've read by other writers seem momentarily flat by comparison. In Armies, Mailer ruminates on the folly of the war in Vietnam and the easy arrogance of the New Left. He probes the fissures between his public and private identity and charts his two-day drinking binge. Pompously and nervously, he compares himself to fellow protester, poet Robert Lowell. Mailer also beats the postmodern theorists by a good decade in meditating on the porous boundaries between fiction and history. Not to mention that long before the term political correctness was revived as a pejorative, Mailer nailed political correctness in Armies as he contemplates the apartment of a liberal academic who hosts a party for him and the other eminent men of letters joining the march. Listen to Mailer. Conservative professors tend to have a private income, so their homes show the flowering of their taste. But liberal professors are usually poor and programmatic, so secretly they despise the arts of home adornment. Their houses look one like the other, for the wives gave up Herculean careers as doctors, anthropologists, labor relations experts. Great servants of the social program were lost when the women got married and relinquished all for Hubber and the kids. So the furnishings are functional. The prevailing hues of wall and carpet and cloth are institutional brown and library gray. The paintings and sculpture are abstract, hopeless imitation Ben Shahn. But bet your $25 to win an assured $10 that the artist on the wall is a friend of the host, has the right political ideas, and will talk about literature so well you might think you were being addressed by Maxim Gorky. In scope and prose style, Mailer reads here like one of the great Victorian social critics, Thomas Carlyle, John Ruskin, Matthew Arnold, whom he references in the title of Armies. Except that, unlike his fellow sages, Mailer is funny and randy and self-buffooning. His personal tetchiness in that passage expands outward into a larger epiphany about American life. That's how Armies of the Night works, as well as his other masterpieces of new journalism, the literary form that Mailer helped pioneer in the 1960s. The contemporary lesser inheritors of new journalism take themselves way too seriously. Mailer's genius in Armies, in Miami and the Siege of Chicago, and even in his nonfiction novel The Executioner's Song, derives from his bear-hug grip on absurdity. Unlike his idol Hemingway, Mailer has always played the tough guy as clown. Whether you're fighting a war or opposing one, he's the writer you want with you in the foxhole.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. We're celebrating Norman Mailer's 80th birthday today. In 1991, he spoke with Terry Gross.
I think you were one of the first great American writers to also be a media personality, and to have that personality be, in a way, a part of your art. Do you think of yourself, or at least your public self, as being one of your greatest characters?
No, I'm amused by it because people have such an outlandish idea of me, and I'm always intrigued with it. They really are so surprised when they meet me. You know, if I've heard one remark 1,000 times in my life, it's that, oh, you know, you're not the least bit the way I thought you'd be. I'm a measure of how bad and inaccurate the newspapers are. Most, after all, the sad truth is that most people who write for newspapers are mediocre writers. And so... The mark of mediocrity is to look for precedent. So they'll look up, they'll open the files on me, and whatever's been written about me before gets written again, thereby confirming the error.
But you did at some point, I think, almost make a decision to cultivate a public personality on TV. You know, on the Cavett Show, on Merv, on David Susskind's show. You know, saying really provocative things. I mean, you even write in advertisements. I think it was in advertisements for myself about how you'd kind of like study TV to think about how you could best come across on it and to most kind of accurately get across the thought or the emotion that you wanted to.
Yeah, but I've given up on that. I don't think you can communicate through TV. Some people may be able to, but I can't. My ideas are too...
complicated?
Yes, too complicated, too full of, I'll say it, too full of nuance. When you start trying to communicate through TV or, for that matter, through newspaper stories, your remarks get garbled and bizarre. I mean, whenever I read a story about myself, I generally shudder a bit. I say, oh, what a bizarre, ugly, sort of off-balance person I appear to be in that story.
You used to always measure yourself against other writers. In advertisements for myself, you wrote, "It is my present and future work which will have the deepest influence of any work being done by an American novelist in these years. I could be wrong, and if I am, then I am the fool who will pay the bill." Do you think your assessment of your own work has changed over the years?
I think I'm a little more relaxed about it. Either my work will or it won't have all that huge effect. Sometimes I hope it will. Sometimes I think it absolutely won't. My real fear these days is not who's going to be the best writer of us all, but whether novel writing as such is going to continue with any health into the 20th century. I'm not sure it's going to. I think 50 years from now, a novelist may be looked upon as the way most people regard poets, which is, oh, they do a very special kind of work. It doesn't have much relevance to my own life. I read a poem once in a while, people say. So I think in 50 years I can say, you know, I think I'm going to read another novel this year. It'll be a most special and peculiar activity almost, because I think the television is driving everything else out.
But how do you size yourself up now when you compare yourself to the other major writers of your generation?
Oh, I think, I'm not going to name them. I think about three or four of us who may last, and I would say I'm one of them.
Your image has always been of the two-fisted intellectual, and you've said that you were a physical coward as a child. When did being manly and being able to fight become important to you?
In my second marriage, my then-wife's father had been a professional fighter. And whenever he came over to visit us, he used to say, come on, let's put on the gloves. He was about 20 years older than me, but of course he knew more about boxing than I did. So I learned quickly and the hard way. And then after that, I got interested in it and did more and more boxing. And I became friends with a couple of professional fighters. And finally, I've had a great friendship with Jose Torres over the years. And I've boxed with him a great deal. At one time, he was the light heavyweight champion of the world. Now, of course, boxing with someone who's as good as that is relatively safe because, he can handle you with no pain, and therefore he has no particular interest in hurting you. But I did learn an awful lot about defense while boxing with him, because if he tapped me once, and then if I didn't make the proper move the next time, he tapped me a little harder. So after a while, he put a great many instinctive defensive moves into me.
But getting back to that image of the two-fisted intellectual, why was that important to you, to not just be a bookish intellectual?
Well, I could answer you by saying, why not? What's so wonderful about being a bookish intellectual? If you're just bookish, there's a tendency to get terribly bitter about people who are physical. And my feeling always from the beginning was, if I want to be a novelist, I've got to be a novelist who can encompass all kinds of experience. My ambition was always, don't ever narrow down the horizons of what you want to write about. Try for as much as you possibly can try for. Learn more all the time. It's stultifying to be a novelist unless you keep opening up working with larger and larger, not necessarily larger and larger canvases, but either larger canvases or more powerful themes.
Norman Mailer speaking with Terry Gross. Today is Mailer's 80th birthday. We'll hear more of their 1991 conversation after the break. This is Fresh Air.